Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Hey, it's Anna, and I want to let you know that this is an episode about having an eating disorder, and we talk about that in detail. If you're having difficulty with food or eating, we've got some resources on our website at deathsexmoney.org.
It's been so long since I've thought about food in any way other than like a number or a fuel that I like honestly don't even remember what it is to think about food in any other way.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
Everything's always about sex.
Why do you want to have sex with me?
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
You do the things you do because you're a homicidal maniac.
And need to talk about more.
He's always been terrible with money.
I'm Anna Sale. Not that long ago, I got an email from a young woman we're calling Charlie. She's 26, and she wrote in about her relationship with her younger brother, Oscar, who's 23. That's not his real name either.
I always regarded him as my best friend, like, because we were a military family and we would move every 2 to 3 years. He was always my best friend wherever we were. He would always be there for me.
And I just wanted to be there because my older sister was there.
People thought they were twins growing up, even though Oscar's much taller than Charlie. He's around 6'5". He told me he likes that because it means he can stand at the back of crowded rooms. But there are other things about his body that Oscar's never felt comfortable with.
I think late elementary school, my parents, or at least my mom, started dropping hints that I was fat. And she put me on a diet. The diet she chose was, it was something a friend of hers told her about called the 600 calorie diet, which is exactly what it sounds like.
Wow. I remember that.
Yeah. And looking back on it, that is an extraordinarily unhealthy way to lose weight.
600 calories in a day. Like, what was allowed? What were you eating?
It's like nothing.
I remember the friend told her about zero-calorie Jell-O, and I had a lot of that.
I'm sorry I'm laughing. I totally remember that now.
Oscar and Charlie were together in a studio when they talked to me, but it's rare for them to be in the same place now. Charlie left home for college 8 years ago, and not long after that, Oscar moved to Europe with their parents.
That was my first move alone. And I think that move, I turned a lot more inward. Like, I didn't have, I guess, my sister there that was like the friend I always had immediately. I started focusing on myself a lot more. And just became a lot more unhappy with my body. And that's also when I started paying attention to what I was eating. And then using what I was eating as a means to try to, I guess, get a body I was more happy with.
And looking back, do you think that at that stage it was like in a healthy way? Like, I want to eat more healthily, I want to lose weight, or does it feel like you were making kind of unhealthy choices?
Yeah, I think it started off in a healthy way, but it very quickly degraded into an unhealthy obsession. I think just my personality type, I am very detail-oriented and very much like a perfectionist. And it went from just me trying to like eat more vegetables and eat less candy into eating zero sugar and eating nothing but vegetables and working out daily.
When did you start losing a lot of weight?
That year, so 11th grade. I started losing weight pretty quickly. I mean, when you're not eating very much and exercising a lot, you do tend to lose weight pretty quickly, I guess, unlike bulimia.
Yeah. Not a great strategy, I can tell you.
Charlie knows about bulimia firsthand because at the same time Oscar was obsessing over his diet, she was developing unhealthy eating habits of her own at college in Colorado.
And, like, fitness is part of the culture. And then I came in and I was just like, oh, wow, like, I feel like a whale. And so I didn't intentionally want to lose weight, but after a while, I intentionally wanted to fit in, and that entailed losing weight.
How did you start making yourself throw up?
It was after a dining hall visit, and I had a friend, and she kind of took me into the bathroom with a toothbrush and was like, this is what you do. And the toothbrush didn't really work for me, so I just used my finger.
And you did it, like, side by side in the stalls?
Yeah. It was a bonding experience, I guess. But it was a terrible bonding experience in retrospect. She initially showed it to me, and then I always did it in isolation afterwards. It was after that, it was never a social thing of like, let's go just throw up. That was not a thing. It was definitely a secret.
And just explain to me, how did that develop? Was it something you did intermittently, if you felt like you overate? Did it become sort of a ritual over time? How did that develop?
It started every now and then, and then it became a habit of almost every day, maybe sometimes twice a day doing it. The more I did it, the more I like learned what foods were better or easier to throw up, which foods weren't as easy to throw up.
And tell me if this is uncomfortable to talk about, but when you were throwing up regularly, can you explain like the emotional process of when you would decide to do it, how you would decide when you were preparing, how you would feel afterwards?
So before I do it, I would get like really anxious and be like, well, I have to do it. I have to do it. And like, as you're eating, you know what you're going to do later. And it was just like this sort of anxiety thing of like, you were just at that point stuffing your face. Like, it's it's not even enjoyable to eat, but you're just eating because you want to throw up. And then after throwing up, he's just like shame and guilt, and like I would just be so angry with myself.
Charlie came home for a visit one summer towards the end of college. It was the first time she'd been around Oscar since he'd developed an eating disorder. And as soon as she saw him, she could tell something was off.
It's one of those things where it's like, oh, I have an eating disorder, and I see my brother measuring his food so precisely, and like all the symptoms of eating disorders were just clear as day. And I remember I tried to reach out to you one time and you locked me out of your Xbox room. Do you remember that?
Yeah. She confronted me when we were eating and I just walked away, and she literally climbed on top of me as I was walking away, and I had to throw her off and lock her out of the room I was going to.
Yeah.
And did you say, what were you saying to him, Charlie?
Do you remember what I said? Because it probably wasn't very tactful.
I don't remember. I just know it was basically calling me out for being anorexic, and that was just something I couldn't handle at that time. So I walked away.
Yeah.
And did you drop it after that?
I did.
Were you throwing up that summer when you were home?
Absolutely.
Coming up, Oscar tells me how his eating disorder has put other parts of his life on hold.
I think being so preoccupied with how I'm eating and just food in general, like I don't want to say I don't have the capacity to feel other things, but it sort of feels that way sometimes, that like there's just no room to feel anything else.
Hi, Anna. My name is Mary. I am 29 and I am from London, England. I saw that you did Hot Dates in 2018 and summer is here, and I wonder if you're gonna do Hot Dates 2019.
Hi, Mary. Good question. Yes, a year ago, we dug into your dating lives in a series that we called Hot Dates. All last summer, we followed a group of listeners as they navigated breakups, hookups, move-ins, and plenty of awkward first meetings. We don't have any plans to do more Hot Dates episodes for now, but you know, if you keep sending us stories like Mary's, we might just have to.
I just came out of a year and a half relationship with my ex-girlfriend, and we ended in like end of February 2019, and since then I have been drinking and kissing and fucking my ass off.
Go Mary. We also just heard from one of the people we met last summer, Miracle, a woman in her mid-20s who was trying to date in her hometown of Decatur, Alabama. At the end of last summer, Miracle had just started messaging back and forth with a new guy. He turned out to be, this is a direct quote, the worst.
But he recently joined the National Guard, so lucky for me, he's kind of been out of pocket, so I've been having to deal with him.
But she told us she's now seeing another guy she met on Bumble.
And he really drew me in with his profile. He hit me with this PowerPoint, and it was super cute. So that's super exciting.
Guys, he used PowerPoint slides in his profile to make the case for why he'd be a good partner. I love that. If you missed our Hot Date series last summer, go back and check it out. You can find all the episodes at deathsexmoney.org/hotdates. And you can send your summer dating stories to deathsexmoney@wnyc.org. On the next episode, I catch up with Rashima Melson. I first met her in her dorm room at Georgetown, where she had a full ride after graduating at the top of her high school class while living in a homeless shelter. I talked to her again after she dropped out during her sophomore year. She ended up going back, and this spring, Rashima graduated from Georgetown.
I'm in the place of trying to live life and move out of survival mode, but at the same time, I'm still like, watch yourself, watch your money, don't do this, don't do that, because I have I have a long way to go before I'll be at a place where I don't have to check my bank account every day.
Let me tell you a good story. It was late on a Sunday afternoon, and my family and I had been away and rolled into the driveway, and everyone was worn out from traveling and getting hangry. But waiting for us was a solution. A Hungry Root box filled with healthy, grabbable snacks and a few different dinner meals to choose from. We tore into this thing like a pack of wild animals and ate all the snacks. But they were healthy, whole ingredients, fresh produce. And then we were set for dinner a few hours later, which only took about 15 minutes to prep and cook and get on the table. I was so grateful to my past self for doing my current self this solid by ordering this box. And it was easy. I took a short quiz to tell Hungry Root what kinds of meat my family eats, the sorts of flavors we like, any dietary restrictions we have, or just things we're trying to avoid, and when I wanted the box to be delivered. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. And don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title the Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Dakota Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM Plus to get access wherever you listen. Thanks. This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. Since leaving college, Charlie says her relationship with food has changed, but it's still not an easy one.
I don't consider myself bulimic, but there definitely don't have healthy eating habits.
What are your habits now?
I'm still very extreme. I overeat a lot. And then I don't eat for a while, and then I overeat a lot and don't eat for a while. But I just don't throw up anymore.
How did you stop throwing up?
I just had enough. Because it's, I can assure you that it's not pleasant. My eyes would always get super red, and I had really bad heartburn from it. And it's just, it wears in your body, and just not the kind of life that I want to lead.
Charlie lives abroad now and is getting her master's. Oscar is a computer programmer in Virginia. They were together last summer on vacation, and for the first time in years, they talked about their eating disorders.
So we were in the mountains, and we were on a hike. And we were coming down the mountain, and we got to talking about serious things.
I mean, I don't know if you were feeling the same thing, but I felt like it was sort of building up. Like I at least felt like there was sort of knowledge that this conversation was going to happen.
But I was a little shocked, actually, because it was a big moment for you that you were able to open up to me in that way. I've always been more open, and Oscar's a little harder to crack.
Yeah, so maybe it was just me who felt like it was building up.
Yeah.
I mean, I was becoming more comfortable with the idea of telling other people. And I mean, the logical first choice for me was Charlie.
Did you feel like you were, like, coming out to each other?
I did. I felt like I was coming out.
Yeah. I mean, I think we'd both kind of seen disordered eating in each other, but this was finally like pointing a finger at it and saying, this is a thing that exists.
But I think our conversation ended when we reached the car.
Yeah. I think there was a pretty sharp transition from when we got to the car. I think,
like, okay, we're going back to reality. Let's not talk about it anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of what it felt like. It was like we're out of the safety of this mountain now, and we're back in the real world where we need to hide things.
The thing with eating and food is it's such a social activity. It's very visible. How you eat can be very visible. What has been the toll of having secrets about how you actually eat?
I think it negatively impacts my social life. I'm a very social person. And the fact that I get really weird about food when we're in social situations, it makes me uncomfortable. And I hate myself for acting weird around food.
Yeah, I know it affects me socially. There are tons of things I say no to constantly because it would affect my eating routine. And so I know it has affected me socially. I mean, I pretty much have the same schedule every day in terms of eating and working out. It's very secretive as well.
Secretive.
Yeah, I almost without fault eat breakfast and dinner on my own. And then, I mean, when I'm at work, I guess I could just go hide in a corner, but I feel like that's a little too overt, so I just eat at my desk, I guess, alone.
And how long have you had that habit, Oscar, that you haven't wanted to be with someone at a mealtime?
I think sophomore year of college, I started only eating alone.
Do you eat the same things every day?
The same type of things.
Variations of the same thing.
Yeah, it's variations of the same thing every day.
Can you give me an example of a dinner that you like to make for yourself?
Um, I think we're going to have to skip that question. It's a little too uncomfortable for me.
Okay. Oscar thinks of his eating habits as an extension of depression. He's been seeing a therapist for years, starting back when he was in college.
I don't know if it's helped me all that much, but it's at least been better than nothing. Because at least there's one person who knows about it, and at least one person who I will have to go back to next week and tell that I did the exact same thing again and that I'm making no progress to. And I think that has been motivation, at least a little bit, to try to start changing.
Do you feel like the vision you have for what you want your body to look like is aligned with how your body actually is built and what it can look like?
I think if I quit my job and focused on like being a bodybuilder, I could get to what I expect myself to be. But realistically, I kind of know that I'm never going to reach a point that I'm satisfied with. But eating disorders aren't rational. And so I still do what I do.
Is it hard to hear your little brother say that, Charlie?
Absolutely. Yes. I want him to be happy, as fundamental as that is. I want him to know, to like accept that people love him. I just want him to enjoy life. And I feel like he misses out on life a lot. And I want my best friend back. Because I think he's perfect.
And I disagree.
Those are siblings we're calling Charlie and Oscar. If you need support for an eating disorder, we've gathered a list of resources on the page for this episode at deathsexmoney.org. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. I'm based at the studios of the investigative podcast Reveal in Emeryville, California. Our team includes Katie Bishop, Annabelle Bacon, Stephanie Joyce, Joanna Solitaroff, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death, Sex, Money on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Both Oscar and Charlie say that talking about their eating disorders with each other has helped, but they know there's still a lot they have to do on their own.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I was expecting Charlie to, like, wave a magic wand and cure me of it.
If I did have that magic wand, I would have used it long ago. On myself first, and then you.
Jerk.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.